Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister. We're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the eighth and final season of SWAT, the 2017 series. And I know for the last few seasons, I've been saying it's the final season, number six, number seven, and now number eight. And this show has just been a bit of a wild ride in that respect.
I wonder if it qualifies as one of the most canceled TV shows.
I don't know, but there have been a few other shows that seemed like to be on the edge of cancellation every season or whatever and pull through. But this one actually was canceled after six. Negotiations happened to get a seventh that was supposed to be its final season.
Wasn't that an abbreviated season?
13 episodes, whereas eight was a full 22.
Yeah, and seven was just supposed to give them time to wrap up storylines. That's why it was abbreviated.
Yeah, so I don't know that seven counts as having been canceled or just expected to be the last, but did well enough. But I think all of the other seasons have been a full 22. Which is pretty unusual these days.
I think they had an abbreviated pandemic season.
I mean, it might have even been an abbreviated first. I don't remember.
First season, as I recall, well, it started in November. Because I was thinking it started in the fall, it wasn't a mid-season. So it was 22 episodes.
Yeah, it was 22 for the first season, 22 for the second, 21 for the third.
But only 18 for the fourth.
Yeah. And man, they had to do some interesting stuff to work around the pandemic, because when one of the regular things is you've got the team in the back of the van going to the mission or whatever, and you can't have everybody in the enclosed space for the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked around that beautifully. This show has really had some very creative ways to handle some very interesting problems.
And during the pandemic, when they couldn't go to places to film, that was when we were suddenly seeing them return to base with the evidence they'd gone and collected.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the people that would have been literal walk-in person from the other department or other agency was now just teleconferencing in.
Yep.
And this season, one of the things they did, I'm pretty sure, is a cost-cutting measure. We got six people on the team, but there were a lot of times we only had five of them.
Yeah.
This guy's off dealing with this, or just nowhere to be found that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little annoying, and it was a little, I thought, obvious, but when you're doing a 22-episode season, eight seasons in, and again, you've already been canceled a time or two, I get being responsible with the money.
I understand why it happened, but to me, the reason it was both annoying and obvious is because the season really began with this hard push of, we've filled that sixth slot.
Yeah, they made a big to-do over it. I think also that new member, Devin Gamble, she had a good arc.
Yes.
Over the course of the season. And I think all of the characters had their moments to shine, had their own kind of spotlight episodes, and had kind of a trajectory, some more so than others. Tan, a little lesser than some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
But still had some good material.
I think Tan had good material that poorly served his character and was almost salvaged by the final episode, but not quite.
I think they didn't know what to do with his character this season, and they had less of a game plan. And there were a few things that I thought they were going to do with some of the other characters that they didn't.
I think the Tan SWAT Academy plotline was...
Well, that was half a Tan plotline and half a Deacon plotline, because his buddy was one of the people going through the academy.
But Tan just kind of throwing up his hands and saying, and quitting, and saying, clearly I was the wrong choice to lead it. Clearly I should hand it back to the old master.
Well, and once Deacon got it, we never saw it again.
Yeah.
And that was disappointing. So I got the sense that the way the writing room, it felt like they were acting. I obviously have no idea what they were really doing, but it felt like there was an every other week cadence. Because there were certain things that we would get one week, skip the next, and come back to the following.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was also a division of almost main plot, subplot sort of material in terms of, obviously, somebody wrote all each episode, all the lines of dialogue, but somebody was in charge of Miko's arc versus deacons versus whatever. And there was, I don't say a lopsidedness to it, but either they were working on the script that week or they weren't, almost.
There was also a lot of pairing off as opposed to coming together as a team. So when it came to Gamble's criminal family, Tan was the pull-in person to support that plot thread for the most part.
Generally, it was either Tan to support or, I was going to say, Hondo. I don't say against, but you know what I mean. But those were the two in that plot line. We never really got too much of any of the others weighing in. Occasionally, we did.
Mm-hmm. When Powell was struggling with parental moments, Hicks was pulled in.
Mm-hmm.
Never Deacon.
Yeah, and Deacon would have been a very obvious choice. Hondo, even.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think part of it was, well, I was going to say, there's only so much time, but they had 22 episodes, which is a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
And they seemed to be, again, segmenting the subplots. It felt different than previous seasons. Yeah. The other thing about the season that felt different to me was in a lot of the past seasons, not all of them, though, there was usually one episode in the middle that was just a gut-wrencher.
Yeah.
There was the one with, I guess it was the flashback to the high school or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Back when Chris was still in K-9 before she got to SWAT.
Mm-hmm.
And just some really powerful episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that too often, but they would usually do it about once a season, of just kind of that gut punch episode.
Yeah.
Likewise, they would do, and they did one of them this season, of, okay, you're basically plainclothes cops today.
Yep.
Because it's all hands on deck for the city.
Yep.
Yep, you're SWAT, but you're in a cruiser and doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, this season, if I were a network exec and I watched this season, I would not have renewed the show. And the reason I say that is because going through this season, I felt there was a majority of episodes that felt like I've watched this before in this show.
Further you get into a show, the more risk of that there is, of course.
Of course.
And I don't disagree with you. I would also have been reluctant to renew it because while it was good, there were parts that felt a little by the numbers.
The number of times I was sitting there going, wait, didn't Street go through this plot line already?
There were a number of things with Miko that felt like he was the stand-in for Street. The mother, they've got this, mm-hmm. they got to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what I would have loved to have seen this season as its end swan song season, knowing that going in, but is logistically impossible or impractical, budget constraints, logistics, availability of other people. Imagine how Hicks's butting heads with his boss would have played out differently if they had brought in some of the other people who'd been. Because who was the one in, like, third season, fourth season, or whatever, they brought in? The lady that was sort of there to oversee, but not quite with Hicks?
Yeah, yeah.
But butted heads at first, but really mutual respect at the end or whatever. They had enough of those kinds of characters. The lady from the first season.
Yes.
That even if they just come in for an episode, either for Hicks, against Hicks, or whatever, and just really shows kind of the community we've built up.
Mm-hmm. And that would have been so much better than really Hicks' job felt like it was on the line in the same way it felt like it was on the line in a previous season. And we had another episode that had a very similar Hicks is on his own at the house and ends up having to take down the bad guy because backup or more people can't get there in time.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes, it shows he's still got the chops. Yes, he's still a cop, even though he's not 30 and in his prime.
And hasn't been out the field in essentially 8 years that we've watched the show.
But the scene played out so similarly to what we'd seen before. It's at night. It's at the end of the workday.
Yep, yep.
And I'm like, I feel like I've watched this before.
And again, not just that we've seen it before, but we've seen it before on this show.
Yeah.
And again, 8 seasons, 22 episodes for many of them, not all of them. So that's a lot of episodes.
But they weren't giving me a new spin. They weren't giving me a step up, if you will.
Worse, I don't even know that they were aware they were repeating themselves.
I think you're right.
That is where I think story editor or continuity, not shot continuity of, hey, mm-hmm. you were facing this way when you gave the line, and now you're facing this way, you know, those sorts of continuity things. But big picture stuff in the writing room of, have we done this before? Is this sufficiently different? Are we doing a new spin on it? Because I don't mind putting different characters into the same situation to see them react differently.
Yes.
But I didn't feel that's what was happening.
I felt Tan reacted to Gamble's family the same way Tan reacted to Street's foster brother.
There's an aspect, though, of the character is the character is the character, so you don't want them going too wildly different. But on the other hand, they should learn from past experience.
Yes. And I saw no sign of 8 years of growth in Tan in that respect.
That's fair. That's fair. I think the actors did good with the material they were given.
Very good.
I think the one playing Powell did a great job and elevated the material she was given.
I would agree with that.
Miko, I think, had a better season this time than last season.
Infinitely.
His introduction, actually it might have even been the season before that, wasn't bad, but it was as a supporting player to Street's story.
Uh-huh.
Which makes him being Street 2.0 all the more ironic.
Yeah.
But he had his own unique characteristics as well.
He stands out better with Street not there for him to be the anti-Street, but well, not anti.
He's really the Street-Luca combination.
Yes.
Because Luca was the one going for the angles and trying to do the entrepreneurship and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have loved to have seen, I was really hoping the series, the final scene would have been them all at Deacon's house with past members of SWAT having the barbecue and just celebrating, hey, it was a tough day and we all made it.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. The end scene of, hey, let's go save the city worked for me. They had a little touch at the end that felt odd to me because I don't recall seeing it. And you were pointing out we may have seen it first or second season.
And that's the thing. If we saw it first season and it gradually fell by the wayside to the point that I was like, it kind of feels like we've seen it before, but I'm not positive.
But if you're going to do that kind of a touchstone, at least, and I hate suggesting this because I don't like the previously on clips, at least bring it there.
Yeah.
And for the final episode of a series, I would have had one of the previously on be, they're in the cars at the abandoned mall from the pilot.
You know, the other thing they could have done, though, is as they went to the closing credits, do you've got basically everybody's walked out of the room, and instead of going straight to black, go to a faded, if you will, and have scenes from those early seasons, assuming they really did it, but have Street do the same thing, have Luca do the same thing.
Almost the ghost image of the other people.
Yes. Chris.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just give us that brief moment of previous members of the team tapping out from the episode and from the series.
Or even as Deacon was giving the gifts, reminding there used to be a tradition. We've kind of gotten away from it, but I think we ought to bring it back.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a number of ways they really could have pulled it in and pulled certain aspects of the show together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good finale. It was billed as a part one, part two, and I was therefore expecting a bit of a cliffhanger of rising crescendo. There's all this, and they've got to save the day in the next. And there was kind of a connection between the two, but not enough for a part one, part two in my mind.
If somebody asked me what the overriding theme of the majority of episodes this season is, I would say betrayal.
I would agree with that. I would say, unfortunately, the other theme, bang, you're dead. I think they had a higher death toll this season than in most.
Where were the beanbag guns?
Not only where were the beanbag guns, but it seemed like most of the people, when they shot them, they killed them.
Yeah.
And I felt there was less mortality in previous seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to make of that. And I think, again, there were some other characters that we got an episode with Deacon's wife, an episode or two with Hondo's dad, one with Hondo's wife.
Hondo's wife was barely mentioned.
Yeah, she was a non-entity, same with the kid. They were mentioned a time or two when convenient, but they were not a thing for most of the season.
Yeah.
Likewise, Deacon's family was mentioned, never seen, and only in two or three episodes were really relevant to the plot.
We had the two kids.
You're right. And they actually seemed younger than I would have thought at that point.
Well, we had the baptism or christening for Victoria just a few seasons ago.
Okay.
She was born during the series.
You're right. But there was the one near the end where we see Deacon's kids.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, in one episode where we see his wife, there's the one with the shoes where the kids are mentioned.
Yep.
So we saw the younger kids, not the teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the teenagers we'd really seen more before. So I don't expect them to have touched on every aspect of every character's life outside of SWAT. But given that's been a key component of the series.
We used to have, it felt like, more locker room scenes where they checked in with one another as a team.
There were only, I want to say, a handful of times we saw the entire team in the locker room. When Miko's nickname came up,
mm-hmm.
and that was well done, and yeah. you needed the whole team there for that. But I'd be hard-pressed to name another time we really saw the entire team suiting up or anything in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt there was a difference in the writing this season. Not in a it's worse thing, but it's different.
Yeah.
And I know I'm pointing some of the stuff out, and I fear some people are going to take it, oh, he didn't like that. No, it's just the DNA of the show was different this season than the last.
Mm-hmm.
And not because, oh, we've added this character, got rid of that, or something like that. It was a difference in the writing room.
Yeah, because there were previous seasons where the SWAT officers were very much a part of the community. And I didn't feel that this season.
The one time we got it was when the cops were shot. After the basketball game in the opening.
And that wasn't our SWAT officers.
It was not our SWAT officers.
Yeah.
But not only do we not have these people are part of the community, but the SWAT community was a lot smaller.
Yeah.
We got two people from 50 Squad, one of which had been on 20 for a bit
mm-hmm.
last season, and then Rocker, who came back for a couple of episodes. And even that seemed to be a setup with no real payoff.
Yeah.
And the setup was something... Wait, they did that with Street a few seasons back.
Yep.
So why bring Hicks's daughter in? Why do that? Why go this way? You know,
mm-hmm.
it had a bit more almost, I want to say, of by the numbers.
Yeah.
It was still good, not as good as past seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they did anything kind of catastrophic or something, but I do think there have been other seasons of this show where they were firing on all cylinders, a bit more original, even when they're doing ripped from the headlines material.
Mm-hmm.
And things that have a bit more payoff and resolution. Even the whole bit with Deacon's stalker, essentially, goes code 4 and boom, we're done.
Yeah.
We don't even see the other cop there to arrest the person or any of this stuff. And it's just poof, that subplot's gone.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they got to harp on stuff, but to not have the equivalent of an epilogue or something, or hey, how did that turn out conversation or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because Powell had mentioned, hey, you've got to shut this down.
Yes.
And to me, that was set up for, okay, what happened to her?
Mm-hmm.
What is she basing that comment on? And we never get anything there. And there is an art to writing a series where you plant aspects of characters' backstory, personality, mindset, and what have you, and then give it a chance to come to the surface and then kind of put it neatly on the shelf, if you will.
Yes.
And I think they were missing a little of the put neatly on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, oh, it's resolved. We can ignore it now.
Mm-hmm.
Be it the SWAT Academy, the Stalker, or a few other things.
Well, there were episodes, and I mean, I'm even thinking of episodes I enjoyed a lot, like the bus station.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed, I'd say, the vast majority of that episode. And yet, there were things there where I'm like, wait, shouldn't that have consequences?
Yeah.
And isn't that a bad decision that we're seeing being made that shouldn't that have both immediate and longer term consequences?
I didn't dislike any episode.
I would agree with that. And none of them felt like filler.
None of them felt like filler. None of them were, wow, that was bad.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of ones that were clearly setting up a subplot, like the warden and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some payoff on that later.
Yeah, the prison riot.
The prison
and
riot, yeah.
Later, the prisoner break.
So they did a good job, but I think in past seasons, they were able to weave stuff a little better together,
mm-hmm.
a little more smoothly, have a little more of the team camaraderie
mm-hmm.
versus almost the pairing off.
I think in past seasons, I felt there was a little more craftsmanship and a little less, oh, look, that person volunteered to help and looks like they're a good guy. Clearly, they are the inside man who did it.
Yeah, there were a couple. It's like, I know I can't trust this person. It's how can I not trust them, though?
Yeah.
I think the difference is, I don't know if it's so much craftsmanship as polish.
That could be.
Because there are a couple of times that just putting another draft on a scene or something, like when Deacon and his first partner are talking before that guy goes to the SWAT Academy, it seemed like Deacon needed information out of this guy, comes at him a little hard, and then suddenly the guy's, oh, sure, I'll talk, kind of a deal. It seemed like he didn't earn that information.
What got me throughout the episode that took place in was that first partner was really beating the dead horse of, you went to SWAT and you never called me. Come on, phones work both ways.
And that would have been brought up in past seasons.
Yeah.
You didn't reach out to me either.
Yeah, you're right. I should have reached out to you, but I don't recall my phone ringing either.
Yeah. And again, it's not that they wrote a bad story, but if somebody had critiqued it, given a little feedback, and they'd written a layer to kind of enhance, cover that, whatever phrasing you want to use there to address that issue, that's what elevates it. And there were some past seasons where I felt they did that sort of thing.
Powell gets in touch with Jace. First time she sees him, Jace is having visitation with his kid.
And we never get anything on the kid, the, at that point, ex-wife or whatever. Yeah, there's a lot there that didn't need to be there that arguably was set up.
I mean, that was potentially a complicating factor in a few ways for Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fell by the wayside. It was like it was only there to make that initial contact complicated. And they didn't think through the, it's a can of worms.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't give them the, well, they didn't have time to address it. Because again, 22 episodes, which these days is two seasons of most shows.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they didn't have time to deal with it, then don't introduce it.
Yeah.
That's something where just a rewrite of one short scene.
Mm-hmm.
He can't talk now because.
Yeah.
Even if it was some girl coming out saying, oh, well, I guess we'll just talk later. And Powell misunderstands and, you know, wackiness ensues or what have you. There are more polished ways to have made that awkward, cut off the conversation the way you need to for your plot to progress without introducing a story element that feels like you need to address it later and you never do.
Yeah. I also felt that one of the goals of the writing room was to drive home to me, this show has been on the air for multiple seasons, and these characters have been doing this job for all these years and more. So we brought back Niecy from a previous season or two. We brought back a few other characters from previous seasons. We had one guy in the previously on that he was from, if not season one, thereabouts. Mm-hmm. We had things that were referred to as, Hondo and Deacon took this guy down 10 years ago. And on the one hand, it is good.
I like the sense of history.
Yeah. But on the other hand, there's an accessibility issue when you're constantly hitting me with this.
I'm going to disagree on that because I don't think they ever did it in a way where I felt, well, I had to have watched that or I should rewatch that episode.
No, but they were doing it in a way that confused me at times of, was it something we saw? Was it not something we saw?
I never felt it mattered if we had seen it or not. And there were a few times where it's like, well, that seems vaguely familiar. But again, comic book background.
Yeah, that's very true.
Speaking up.
Yeah.
So many times people complain of comics aren't accessible because there's history.
Mm-hmm.
And hell, I've even seen somebody comment on Star Wars movies having too much history to possibly understand a movie. And if you can't understand the movie because you need that theoretical PhD in the material, that's bad writing.
Yeah.
But having history, having continuity does not mean inaccessible.
I want history and I want continuity, but when they're pulling out things from season one that's now supposed to be relevant.
I took them as Easter eggs and acknowledging the past versus shame on you for not remembering.
Okay.
If there was something where an episode hinged on, we needed to recognize the food truck that Luca had invested in back mm-hmm. in second or third season.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that as a last minute reveal. And, oh, we should have known that. I'd be complaining if that's inaccessible.
Yeah.
But just like when we see the same guy they've dealt with, I forget which department or agency he was from.
Oh, robbery homicide.
Yeah, robbery homicide. We've seen him almost every season.
Yep.
They don't reintroduce. They don't necessarily give us the, mm-hmm. it's just, hey, we've worked with him before.
Yep.
And we happen to recognize him. New reader or new viewers would not. But likewise, they could introduce somebody else and say, oh, yeah, I worked with him back in the day on Vice or in this department, that department, whatever. And they've done that a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see that any more or less accessible. They give us what we need to know. They're not expecting us to have the backstory, the in-depth knowledge of those characters. So I never felt this season that they crossed the line into inaccessibility. That having been said, I do think they beat the drum a lot more this season of, we've got this history. We've mm-hmm. done this for so long. These things happened that far back. And they were reminding us half the team has been on this team for 8 years.
Yeah. I mean, they brought up Deacon's struggle with not getting team lead 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But not in a way that we had to know that or had to remember watching those episodes.
Agreed.
Because they'd also brought up some other stuff of, here's how he got the nickname. Here's how this happened, mm-hmm. whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I always kind of push back on this a little because I think a lot of people confuse having history, having continuity, having that backstory, whether we've seen it or not, that's different than accessible.
I guess for me, it's just confusing when I can't tell if they're implying I should have seen it or not.
I don't know that they were trying to imply either way on that.
Okay.
And again, if there was a strong sense of we're glossing over this because you should just know.
Mm.
And I've seen comic writers make that mistake six ways to Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You get the big reveal, you get this image, and I'm like, they think I should know who that is.
Yeah.
And I don't. And I've read a lot of comics.
Mm-hmm.
There are others where you give a little line of dialogue, you give a memory jog here or there. And if you give me what I need to know to understand the story, I'm good. Now, if I've seen the other thing they're referencing that gives me more context, I may get another layer out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Tan's comment to his girlfriend of, my last relationship really messed me up.
Yep. Yeah.
He could have made that first season.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. But we'd seen his entire relationship with Bonnie.
Yeah.
And how it messed him up.
Yeah.
So we have that context. We get more out of that line of dialogue that somebody just watching that episode wouldn't have, but I think would still understand, oh, he had a past relationship that messed him up, that's why he's acting this way, etc.
Mm-hmm.
They would be able to relate just imagining what it might have been.
Yeah. And I brought up Niecy because I did actually like the subplot that happened with her missing the parole call-in and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In part because it put the police officer in a good light.
Yeah.
It showed the police officers are human. They jump to conclusions. They make mistakes. But they recognize when they make a mistake. They recognize when they jump to a conclusion. And they genuinely try to do the right thing.
Yeah. Well, and having another member of the team say, well, you know, I heard about this. Could this be the case?
Yeah.
And just offering that other vantage point and then being open to it.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, oh, no, it's got to be this way.
Yeah.
So, again, I think they do a good job writing on this show. It's just, in some past seasons, they've done a better job
mm-hmm.
writing on this. I think they landed the ending for the series.
Yeah.
It didn't end how I thought it would end. I was expecting a passing of the torch. This series started when Hondo became team lead. Ergo, maybe it ends with somebody else becoming team lead.
And on the one hand, I expected that. But on the other hand, I don't see a next team lead.
It almost would have had to have been Deacon. Because anyone else, if he was still on the team, wouldn't make sense.
But Deacon's already retired once.
Yeah.
And,
I don't think it was a mistake to not change the team lead at the end. To have it be a, and they lived happily ever after,
yeah,
effectively.
Yeah.
Or they swatted happily ever after.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any objection to that. And I liked the ending gift from Deacon.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't help feel that would have been more appropriate back, I want to say, end of fifth season, when the original 50 squad for the five seasons, really the last time we saw them all together.
Original 20 squad, but yeah.
20 squad, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I liked what they did, but a few of these people were fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's an aspect where you could see season 8 as almost the equivalent of, I guess it was Stargate, SG-1 season 8, where they have taken an established team that had been going for a while, flipped out a few members, gotten past the forming, storming, norming, or whatever that order of team building is. They've gone through the initial gelling of the team dynamic to where they're now a cohesive unit and can start kind of going forward.
Yeah.
So I felt they ended on a fairly clean mm-hmm. note that made sense.
Yeah.
And I liked it in so much as if they had decided to do, let's do a SWAT TV movie a couple of times a year or something.
Mm-hmm.
They totally could have done that.
I like the action. I really like the car driving scenes.
My only disappointment with that is I thought they set up Gamble
yep.
as being a better driver than Tan, who was driving Black Betty.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of times I think they really should have had Tan in one of the Chargers and Gamble in the other, really doing an almost Fast and Furious sort of episode.
Yeah.
And Justin Lin, who is one of the people behind this show, isn't he the guy behind, or wasn't he one of the guys behind?
Well, that's fine. I'd have to look.
I know he was also behind the revived MacGyver.
Ah.
So, I think they did a good job. They went in a different direction on a few things than I would have gone a different way with who the sixth member of the team was this season. What they did worked fine.
Mm-hmm.
Worked good. Good character. Good actress. So, I am sorry to see the show go.
Mm-hmm.
I am not surprised to see it go after 8 seasons. I'm surprised it got the 8th season. Pleasantly surprised, of course. Yeah. Into the 7th. There is going to be another SWAT show, SWAT Exiles, I think it is.
I think so, yeah.
With Shamar Moore and potentially nobody else from this series. Don't know. We'll find out. I think it's got a 10-episode first season. I don't know. I also don't know when it airs.
Or where slash how.
Where, how, when, whatever. Yeah. Is it going to be similar to this? Is it going to be a more serial narrative? Is it going to be more action-oriented? I don't know what the take's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully they'll have a chance to at least toss a couple of lines of dialogue on how everybody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I would have really liked for this last season to have found a way to acknowledge a couple of the other characters, at least through lines of dialogue, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Good show. I think it's worth checking out. And as I recall, you had seen it at one of the local comic conventions and recommended it to me.
Yeah.
I figured, well, I'm not really looking for another procedural, but I watched it, I liked it, and here we are 8 seasons later.
It's got good energy.
Yeah, yeah. When it really hits its mark, it is just beautiful television.
Mm-hmm.
Even on its worst episode, it's still very fun television.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they had a clunker the entire run. They had some that weren't as good as the others.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of anywhere just, geez, how did this make it to air?
Mm-hmm.
And that says something.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall. And thanks again for listening.